everybody, let's get back to talking about food, shall we? It's all about food right now on July 29, 2014. I want to bring on my next guest, Jason Del Gondio. He's a writer, speaker, thinker, and activist dedicated to social justice. He's currently an assistant professor of rhetoric and public advocacy at Temple University in Philadelphia. His areas of scholarly expertise are in the philosophy of communication, social and political theory, rhetoric, and critical analysis with a focus on social movements and radical social change. Jason has appeared on television and radio and regularly speaks on college campuses and public venues. He has written on such topics as autonomy, immaterial labor, corporate control, the rhetoric of Barack Obama, performance art, the Occupy movement, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, and the relationship between neoliberalism and the university. Welcome, Jason, to It's All About Food.
Hi, Karen. How are you doing?
Good. So we're going to talk today about the terrorism of I can't say this word.
I know, it's tough.
Because it's a horrible word. The terrorization of dissent. You co-edited this book with Anthony Nocella, who we've spoken to a few weeks back on this program. Very chilling subject.
Yes, it is, and it's one of the reasons why I'm actually both excited and proud to have worked on this book. I see this book as a form of political intervention into a world that really needed to be exposed, critiqued, discussed, and debate. And so obviously we're talking about the AETA, which is an acronym for the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, and that's the focus of the book. And we basically bring together a cross-section of lawyers, scholars, and activists, and folks from sociology, anthropology, political science, rhetoric, philosophy, et cetera, and also kind of expose and critique and intervene into the AETA.
This book really raises the bar on this subject because you have all of these people with phenomenal credentials and intelligence. This is not, you know, some groovy little group of people complaining about some legislation that happened a little while ago. This is very serious.
No, I agree. I'm glad that you recognize that. I mean, one of the things we tried to focus on when we were compiling the contributors, et cetera, was bringing together people that really can bear witness to the problems of the AETA and speak and articulate about basically how it violates First Amendment rights, how it has a chilling effect on free speech, the right to protest, et cetera. And, you know, given my background in terms of rhetoric and communication, I personally can understand how perception works, right? And so if the larger audience or the readership or Americans at large see certain kinds of credentials attached to writers' names, contributors, they're more likely to pay attention and actually respect and take note of what's being said in the book.
Now, there's a lot of things that are scary about the AETA, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. First of all, anyone who is against the exploitation and torture of animals for any reason, primarily for food, but also for animal testing and all kinds of other things. This act makes many of the things that we do almost an act of terrorism.
Yeah, and that's actually, I agree, that's probably the scariest part of this act, this bill, this piece of legislation, is that basically, if you inhibit a corporation's ability to make a profit from the exploitation of animals, you could potentially be called a terrorist. Now, if you think about that, that's extremely scary.
I mean, right? I'm talking to people all the time saying,
right,
don't eat meat,
right,
let's shut down factory farms. Does that make me a terrorist?
Well, exactly. So, for instance, just a few weeks ago, two activists were charged with releasing minks from a fur farm. And they are being charged under the AETA with terrorism. Now, releasing minks is obviously an illegal activity, right? I'm going to assume,
yep,
that any activist engaging in that kind of activity recognizes potential consequences. But then to jump from a legal activity of releasing minks from a fur farm to charging them with bona fide, quote-unquote, terrorism just doesn't make any sense. I would assume that any reasonable person looking at this case would say, I don't see where the terrorism comes into play here. Right? No human being was harmed and no animal was harmed. So how can we call that terrorism? And that's basically what the AET does. It sets a context, it sets a pretense for really trying to stigmatize, demonize, in many ways, quarantine animal rights activism, right? So at this point, if you threaten the ability of a corporation to make a profit off of animals, you could be legally tried as a terrorist.
And this law came about even though there were already laws on the books that would punish for these types of illegal activities. This particular law really wasn't necessary to resolve what to do with those who have done things like you just mentioned and some other acts that affected property.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, let's put this into perspective here. So the AETA was passed in 2006 in the wake of 9/11. And, of course, this piece of legislation has the word terrorism in it. And in the wake of 9/11, anything with the word terrorism in it is going to receive priority. Right? Now, of course, though, this wasn't the first time this kind of law was passed. So back in 1992, a previous law was passed called the AEPA. So it was the Animal Enterprise Protection Act. And basically, the AEPA has all the same laws in it, right? The AETA simply has accomplished the ability to lead with the word terrorism. So in many ways, it's a PR campaign, a smear campaign, etc. Now, even if we go further than that, though, right, all these quote-unquote illegal activities that we're discussing are already outlawed by most states. So if we talk about vandalism, trespassing, things like that, we all know that these are against the law.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then becomes, why do we need this quote-unquote mega law, this federal law, to reinforce what's already being reinforced? And I think this really points to the heart of the matter here, right? By inserting the word terrorism into the title, it's able to demonize and stigmatize animal rights activists as terrorists, right? And I would say that the AETA does at least two basic things here. One, it protects and safeguards corporate profit before anything else. Right, and unfortunately, that has been a mainstay of American society. We can point to all kinds of legislation, all kinds of laws and bills that have been passed, that really it's about corporate profit before anything else.
Yeah.
But then two, like I said also, it also demonizes the animal rights movement. And what happens when that occurs? It has a chilling effect on the freedom of speech and the right to protest. And I think those are the two basic problems, along with other things, but those two basic problems with this law.
Now, we never hear about this except on shows like this one.
Right.
Mainstream media is not talking about the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. And some people might think that it just concerns animal rights activists, but it really affects free speech. It affects democracy. It affects any compromised group because we're setting precedent.
Oh, I agree 100%. And I think that's one of the biggest parts, or one of the biggest issues with this piece of legislation. And again, like you said, I think some people hear just the title of the book or the title of the legislation and think, oh, it only applies to animal rights activists. That's not true, right? I mean, really, I think anyone who's concerned with creating a better world is now being threatened by this piece of legislation, right? And if we were to, let's say, apply the principles of the AETA back throughout history, we have a very different American history. And I say that because almost every right, liberty, and freedom that we hold dear has come by way of activism and by social movements. And just about every social movement that has ever existed has used civil disobedience, direct action, things like that. Right?
Now, I'm not a promoter of violence ever.
Oh,
but
no.
But all of these movements that you've mentioned have all kind of moved forward with a little bit of violence. You know, we had the Boston Tea Party, and
no, exactly, yeah. I mean,
there's always been some destruction of property and some action to get people's attention.
Well, I agree with everything you just said. I would maybe just frame it slightly differently and say, well, hasn't every social movement, to one degree or another, interfered with corporate profit at some point? And the answer is yes. Boston Tea Partiers, abolitionists, women suffragists, civil rights activists, anti-war activists, LGBT activists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. By the very nature of the fact that we live in a capitalist society and corporations have so much control, at some point there will be a power play between activists and corporate profits. Right? And what the AETA does, is basically safeguards corporate profits, saying it's off limits. You cannot even think about or talk about interfering with that process. Right?
Now,
that's problematic.
Yes. Now, this book, a lot of it talks about the history of the AETA, how it came about, what it is, how it's impacted people, and you have many different voices who give their spin on this issue from many different angles. And the part that I actually liked the best was part four, which was the interviews and personal reflections. I always love the individual voice on certain things because we can relate the best when we hear an individual voice,
yeah,
rather than getting buried in all the legal terms and he said, she said, and whatever. All of that's important, of course, but we're moved by an individual story, and each one of these is really quite profound.
Oh, I agree. And when I was working on the book, you know, co-editing it, things like that, and I came across these interviews and these personal reflections, I pretty much had the same experience you did, where, to me, this is the most moving part of the book. You're talking about individual lives that were utterly disrupted by this piece of legislation, right? And so in this part of the book, we have interviews or personal reflections by people who either have been charged with and serve time in prison, or have been, or the charges were dismissed. Either way, imagine the FBI busting down your door at 6 a.m. and arresting you and your housemates, things like that. And then not only that, but then being stigmatized by the label of terrorist for the rest of your life. Even if the charges are dropped, how does that look in public spotlights, when you apply for a job interview, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And I mean, these human stories that are told in part four, I think, are very moving, very troubling, and it really evokes kind of the urgency and the problematic nature of the ATA.
And the law does, in some ways, what it intended to do, if you read between the lines, but it scares people. It puts fear into them as far as being activists.
Oh, sure, 100%. I agree. I really do think that is the purpose of the law. I mean, sure, the law does now have federal standing. It can be used to prosecute people, to indict people, to arrest people. But I think overall, though, it's a larger communication campaign to kind of have activists internalize this fear and thereby not act upon their ethical concerns about animals, the environment, and things like that. And I really think that is the purpose of the law.
Okay, so how are we going to get this law off the books? How do we go back to a real democracy with freedom of speech and not be afraid to speak out?
Well, I think the first thing is trying to raise awareness about this law. Like you mentioned a little while ago, almost no one has heard about this law, right? So the book
yep.
came out a few weeks ago. I'm talking to some friends and family members about it, and everyone says, well, how come I haven't heard about this law before? And I said, that's exactly the problem. Right? So I think the first step is really raising awareness, right? Having open discussions, public panels, have experts come and talk about it, have reading groups, whatever the case may be. But I think more people need to be informed about the problematic nature of this piece of legislation. And then from there, we have to find a way to pressure our lawmakers to repeal this law. I mean, I definitely think this law should be repealed immediately because it's unconstitutional and violation of the First Amendment rights.
Now, there is one group that's trying to do that, and I think that's one of the last sections in your book. Let's see. Where is that? Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they
with Heidi Pogosian and the National Lawyers
Guild? The foie gras people. The people that were fighting foie gras and...
Oh, yes. Okay. Sorry. It's been a while since I've read the book myself, so I apologize about that. Yes. So there are groups of people that are trying to, you know, basically take the fight to the legislation, right? They want to go to court and try to demonstrate that the AETA is actually unconstitutional and a violation of basic rights, constitutional rights.
Oh, it's the New York City-based Center for Constitutional Rights.
Right.
Yes.
Well, that's a type of organization that, by its very nature, would be concerned with this kind of act. And I would say something like the ACLU, National Lawyers Guild, all these types of organizations have a serious investment in understanding and overturning this kind of law because it basically violates basic things that we as Americans take for granted.
Mm-hmm. So far, this particular suit, Blum versus Holder, was dismissed, and now they're appealing the dismissal.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So where do you think that's going to go? You have any idea?
That's hard to say. I mean, I'm not, a legal scholar by any means. I'm hoping it gains more traction. Again, one of the things in trying to expose the problematic nature of this law, actually the first weekend of September, I think it's the 5th, 6th, and 7th, some folks are organizing a national weekend of action against the ATA, right? And so a weekend like that is supposed to expose what's going on here, give, organizations like the Center for Constitutional Rights a platform to voice their concerns, get their message out, et cetera. And so hopefully that kind of weekend and other days of action, in upcoming months and years will give more organizations a better chance to educate the public on what's going on. And in doing so, there's kind of an inherent symbiotic relationship where all of a sudden the lawmakers are now on the defensive. Right. So if lawmakers support this law in the past and all of a sudden they're getting public backlash, now they're forced to defend their stance and maybe rethink their stance. And that's kind of the whole purpose here.
OK, that's good. One of the chilling things, the whole book was chilling, but one of the chilling things was reading about the FBI and how it's like they're keeping an eye out on animal activists, just looking all the time just to see if they can find us doing something wrong, to catch us in the act, and spending a lot of money doing this where, if you know anything about an animal activist, we're compassionate people.
Right.
We don't believe in the exploitation of anything. We don't believe in violence of anything. I don't believe in killing anything.
Right.
No,
I agree. Right? So if you think about all the problems that are going on in this country or around the world,
that's where they want to focus their attention, yeah.
Why do they want to focus their attention on animal rights activists? And I would say, okay, well, two things. One, you're right. To think about it in the context of you have basically pacifists of one kind or another, right? Having organizing meetings, having speaking gigs, things like that, and all of a sudden FBI agents will show up to make sure that you're not breaking the law. Right? And out of all the things they could focus on, they're focused on animal rights activists.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then, two, implied in what you were saying earlier, think about how much money it costs the FBI to do that, right? So basically talking about taxpayer money, right?
Yep.
So is that the most sensible way to spend taxpayer money? And I would say no, right? There are a lot more pressing issues in this world other than, animal rights activists protesting a company or corporation, a certain kind of farming tactic.
And then the other part is how they have paid people to work undercover to infiltrate some animal rights organizations and in some ways kind of encourage them to do the wrong thing and then get caught in the act.
Yes, unfortunately that is a reality that we live with now. Now, of course, this is not entirely new. I mean, we can go throughout history and talk about how different law enforcement agencies have infiltrated certain social movements, activist groups, et cetera, most famously COINTELPRO from the 1950s and 60s, et cetera. Now, some Americans think, well, that was just in the past. That doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true, though. It does happen. And like you're saying, it's happening with animal rights activists, which really makes no sense whatsoever in my mind.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's where our tax dollars are going. But you know that the tax dollars are just being spent in order for a few to be protected so that they can keep making a lot of money.
Oh, exactly. And
that's what it's all about.
Right. Well, it goes back to the subtitle of the book. So the subtitle of the book is Corporate Repression, Legal Corruption, and the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. And the first two parts of that subtitle, Corporate Repression and Legal Corruption, is basically talking about what we're discussing here, in the sense that corporations have so much ability, so much power to influence and basically corrupt the political system and the legal system, right? And so certain laws and policies are being passed not for the good of the public, but for the good of corporate profits. And that's a serious issue in this country and with this particular piece of legislation.
Okay, so let's wrap this up, and I asked before what can we do about it, but let's just highlight a few things that all of us can do right now.
Well, I'd say first and foremost is to become more educated about this law, and I would actually encourage all of our listeners to just Google the AETA or the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, and you can actually find the actual bill online. It's only 2 pages long, right? So I would encourage readers to go out, look it up, and read it for themselves, and really decide on their own account why this is problematic. And as you read it, it's really not complicated. It's very broad, it's very vague, etc. And as you read between the lines, you can see how it's intending to demonize and stigmatize animal rights activists. Then from there, though, I would encourage everyone to get more politically involved. You know, contact your lawmakers, contact your local radio or news stations, encourage more outlets to cover this story, encourage lawmakers to explain why this is on the books. And if they can't explain it, then put their feet to the fire and ask them to repeal the law. That's what I would basically do. So one, become more educated, and then two, ask lawmakers to repeal this law as soon as possible.
Okay, that's everyone's assignment. You have to Google Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act and read it. And then if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to me at info@realmeals.org, and then I'll send them off to Jason, and he'll respond, right?
Yes, definitely.
And is there a way to find you? Is there a website or something?
Yes, my website, just my name, so it's www.jasondelgandio.net.
Okay, jasondelgandio.net. Well, I think this should be a book in every law school, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, I agree that every law student should have to read this book.
Law students have to read this book. Good. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food, and thank you for being a part of this, this, what do we want to call it, this expose.
Well, thank you for having me on. I find it always a great privilege to be able to speak about such important issues.
Yes, it is an important one. All right. Have a great day, Jason.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Well, bye-bye. What do we have, about a minute? A minute left. And we're listening together to It's All About Food. I'm listening. I'm talking. And As I mentioned before, info@realmeals.org, I really want to hear from you, not just about the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, but about anything related to this program or food. If you just have a question, shoot it off to me, please. I want to hear from you. And back to my website, responsibilityandliving.com. I hope you will look at the article that I just put up, my visit to the Head and Neck Cancer Congress, where I talk about all of the opulence and hypocrisy and how people are talking about all this great research to prevent these horrible cancers, and at the same time, they're serving cancer-promoting foods to all of the practitioners at the conference. It just didn't make any sense at all, especially after I talked to a few people who acknowledged that their treatments work better when their patients are healthier. Now, when someone has cancer, you don't think that they're healthy, but there are healthy patients or healthier people that do come down with these illnesses. I'm one of them. I had ovarian cancer, and I thought I was pretty healthy going through all of that, and I survived my treatment and I'm thriving now because of the foods that I was eating then and now. Very important. All right. Thank you for joining me today. This has been another It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass, and please have a very delicious week.